The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this February 2nd, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us on a sunny, chilly day in the Auburn Opelika area. And yes, happy February, everybody. Ooh. Yesterday was Feb 1. Today's the first Monday. But don't worry, it's the shortest month of the year. It's going to be okay. It's also, I was told today, a perfect box month. Where yes. Feb 1 is on a Sunday, February 28th is on a Saturday, so it's a perfect square on the calendar. So if you were looking for something to cure your OCD-ness, there you go. So that can get you through the rest of the Monday. But, man, we appreciate you being with us. We got a ton to get to on the show today. A very reactionary Monday on the program. But, Christian, happy Monday to you, sir.
Happy Monday. Yeah, happy box calendar. Happy 1 year of the Luka Doncic trade. I know that really shook you up this morning when you saw that it's been
a year already. Yes, to yeah. Los Angeles.
Wild.
Wow.
A wild year. Not spending too much time here talking about that. In fact, that's the only time that we'll talk about that.
Yes.
Here on the show today, you mentioned it, a very reactionary show for you here today. We're talking Auburn, Tennessee. We're talking some quotes from SP in the post-game presser, our final stats, our thoughts from that contest, and Auburn now having a week off until Alabama comes to Neville Arena on Saturday at 3:30. We also have a little bit of football news, both that directly affects Auburn and, I guess, indirectly affects Auburn. Before we take a look for the next hour or so after that, around the SEC schedule from what Auburn has done. The first half, some things that could have gone better, some things that went really, really good. And then we'll talk, where do you like right now for Auburn? Are you ahead of schedule? Are you behind schedule? Talk about that. And then kind of look at the next half of the SEC schedule. Some things that cannot go wrong and some things that need to go right. Some things that need to be really good for Auburn in that next 9-game stretch before you hit Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Kind of to round out your regular season in the SEC, what needs to happen, and what could the outcome look like? All of that before we get to Jacob Hillman as he joins us on the phone lines every single Monday at 3:30. So a lot of hardwood talk here on the show for you this afternoon, but you feel like that's kind of the way things go, especially now here on Monday before we have a little bit of baseball conversations that we'll be able to have on Mondays. And I know we're both looking forward to that, but hardwood dominates the conversation here today.
Yeah, and just a little sneak peek preview for baseball. We are nothing official, but we are in the works of picking up on a tradition that we had last year on a week-to-week basis. So for those who were around last year, especially in our Auburn baseball coverage, you know what I'm talking about. We're in the works to get that happening again. So stay tuned. Some exciting things.
And I'm for a baseball guy, so I'm glad you didn't mention it because you just can't.
What do you mean?
You're not allowed to mention things before they happen.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, I don't know. Have you ever listened to a broadcast of mine? That's all I do is mention it and then jinx it. That's all I do.
And then you get the parents turn around and you have to throw your hands up.
Only
sorry,
in baseball.
Sorry, I have to.
Yeah, only in
it doesn't get worse than the Jacob Goins broadcast. I've known that.
It's more
from
of a miracle when it doesn't happen than when it does at this point.
I would agree with that. From being your color commentator for 2 years – and now going back and listening to games of, especially when you send me clips of, Oh, man, listen to this. And it's, man, he hasn't struck out all series. Oh, there you go. You yeah. already know. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night.
Yeah, yep. It's just, it's impressive. It is, no doubt. And so, phone lines are open today. If you would like to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you talking Auburn, Tennessee, talking SEC basketball, Auburn basketball down the stretch, whatever you would like. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number to call in. Again, 334-321-1390. Whatever is on your mind, whatever you want to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. Or you can hit us up in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. That was you this time. And I do want to start by addressing a text message in the personal cell phone line. Our friend Brody over at Winter Timber Outdoors, he asks if he is allowed to call in today, and the answer to that is no, you are not. You are not allowed to call in, Brody, because he cheers for the team that wore the wrong colored orange on Saturday. He is a volunteer at heart. He's a good friend of ours.
Brody, it's the Auburn bye week. Why would you want to call in about that?
Okay? Come on. We have moved on from Tennessee, okay? We are...
You think we think of... No, I'm just kidding.
No,
I can't.
No, can't go there. No, Brody, we appreciate you. You can enjoy the win. Him and I were texting Saturday evening into Sunday, and I said, I hope we play again in Nashville. I hope that Auburn and Tennessee meet again. I do, because I think Auburn, in perfect transition into the start of the show, Auburn did not play its best basketball Saturday. They didn't. Auburn did not play its best basketball. I don't think Tennessee did either.
No.
But Tennessee gets the win 77-69 over Auburn in Thompson Bowling, where Tigers were down by 10 at the half. They were down double digits for a lot of the second half. They were crawling from behind the entire way. And the closest they got was three.
Four times.
And they just couldn't take it. They couldn't get over the mountain. They continued to climb, and then the rock gave way and they fell back down. They picked themselves up and they climbed it again. And then the rock gave way and they fell again, and Auburn just couldn't get any closer. They lose 77-69.
I believe it was the Georgia game on the road for Auburn where I filled in with after the game with our good buddy Jack Hutton, and we did some on-air calculations, and I believe Auburn was 7 of 25 in that contest when trailing by 3 points or less. Because remember, we made the jokes of how they could not get the lead. They'd look like the best team in the country if they were down by 8 or 10. All of a sudden, it would get to one bucket, and they just could not score. Man, you felt like that was the very same thing that happened in Knoxville last Saturday, rather, of when Auburn was down by 10 points. For those next three or four possessions, they looked like the better team. They looked like the best team on the floor, and then all of a sudden it became a one-possession game, and Auburn had the chance to either tie it, take the lead, or at least make it a one-point game. Couldn't get a shot, and then couldn't get a stop. And all of a sudden, two or three possessions later, it's right back up to 8, and you feel like that was kind of the ebb and flow of the entire second half. Jack mentioned this to us because we all watched the game together. It always takes Auburn about 5 minutes, almost the under 16 media timeout and then some, for Auburn to really get a good shot at the rim and feel like they know how to shoot the basketball.
And he was talking in specifics at Tennessee.
That's very much so. Yes.
In that arena.
At Tennessee, in that arena, where it just feels like, man, there's 4 or 5 minutes of, what was that? Mm-hmm. But then you get to the under 16, and all of a sudden maybe a jump shot finally hits, and you get into a little bit of a flow. But, man, was not pretty. Really on either end when you look at the shooting numbers, and it really never does in this rivalry. Tennessee shoots 44%, which I would tell you is probably good enough to win when these two teams play each other. Auburn shoots 38%, but 7 of 31 from the three-point line. That right there is a number that we have talked about all season long. Should never be more than 25, and even when it's 25, I still get a little eerie about it.
And the problem with that number is what we were talking about last week in praising Stephen Pearl and his praising of his team of, we're still going to shoot. I want them to shoot threes. They just have to be good looks. They have to be open looks. How many, without going back and fully watching, we've gone back and watched highlights, but not the full game, I don't think, of the 31 threes that Auburn took, how many of those were good, open looks. I think it's more than people would think.
I'd say 18.
I think that's a fair number. Sure. 16, 18, 20, somewhere in there.
Ones that aren't shots that are in the air and you know they're not going in.
Yeah. There were some that were contested. There were some that were late. There were some that were like, oh, goodness, what are we doing? Right? But for the most part, I don't hate most of the threes that Auburn took. The problem was, from the get-go, you were not making shots.
No.
Keyshawn Hall was not making shots. Tahad Pettiford was not making shots. I mean, Kevin Overton was not making shots. I mean, Key ended up going 3 for 9, which is percentage-wise fine. But if you're not making them, I don't want you shooting 9 of them. Kevin Overton goes 1 for 7. Tahad Pettiford goes 2 for 11. That hurts you. Those are not turnovers.
Against Tennessee, they are. No, I knew where you were about to go with that.
Yeah.
Against Tennessee, missed shots almost go down as turnovers, especially three-point shots, because they're either really long turnovers that get them out in transition, especially when Tennessee isn't a team that wants to go out and live in transition, or it creates one and done, and next thing you know, you're playing defense for 45 of the next 60 seconds,
yeah.
And it basically makes it to if it's a turnover because that Tennessee team steals a possession.
I think that's the point. I think the second one you said is more crucial than the first. The idea that you're one and done in a game where you got manhandled on the boards.
Yeah.
Manhandled, bullied, just spanked on the boards.
Which goes to show you why the number of threes were taken.
46 to 30, Auburn gets out-rebounded in this game. For a team, Christian, that had really started to find its way rebounding the basketball. For a team that had really turned it on in their paint presence on both ends of the floor, man, you were nowhere to be found. You gave up 8 boards to Nate Amint. You gave up 8 boards to Bishop Boswell. You gave up 8 boards to Jalen Carey. You gave up 8 boards to Amari Evans. 4 different Tennessee Volunteers had 8 rebounds, and Dwayne Brown had 7 for them. You can't do that. Auburn got bullied on the boards. And the fact that Filip Jovic tied the team for rebounds with 7.
In 17 minutes.
That's bad.
There were times that he got 2 or 3 offensive rebounds that single-handedly kept Auburn in this basketball game.
Down the stretch, absolutely. There were, 2 or 3 of them that we counted and verbally said, because it led to Auburn points. I think a couple of them led to buckets. I think he got fouled on one of them.
It led to 5 directly, and then the very next trip, he got an offensive rebound, missed both free throws. So it could have been 7 points in about 2 minutes on 3 offensive rebounds that himself alone would have accounted for. But then you go and you think about what Filip did and how much he impacted Auburn on the offensive glass. You look at Tennessee, who had 17 offensive rebounds. We told you on this show that Tennessee is not better, and I guess that comes with air quotes, they're not better than most offensive teams on the first shot. But how many times, especially in this rivalry, does Tennessee's best offense come when they just chuck it at the rim? Because they're one of the best offensive rebounding teams every single year. You have 2 or 3 guys that have inside position to where you can get a rebound and a layup, or you can get a rebound and a kick out, and that is when it becomes a really good shot. It's exactly what you saw in that game on Saturday night. If Auburn could have rebounded, especially defensively, which, credit to Tennessee, but you can also point the finger at Auburn because there was a lot of laziness as soon as the shot went up for Tennessee.
A lot of ball watching.
A lot of ball watching.
Yeah.
Very minimal boxing outs and very minimal, turning, finding a body, and going after the basketball. Much more of a, our guy down low is going to get it. Then all of a sudden, it's the weak side rebound on the other side. But credit to Tennessee, but man, there's the finger that gets pointed to Auburn because you know what Tennessee wants to do. You know that Tennessee thrives in rebounding the basketball and especially offensive rebounding, where they're the number one team statistically based off of their possessions in the entire country. Stephen Pearl said it. They did exactly what they wanted, and they bullied you down low.
And what also hurt for Auburn, again, talking Tigers and Vols as Tennessee beats Auburn 77-69 on Saturday night in Knoxville, Auburn got a taste of its own medicine at the free throw line in this game.
Yeah.
How many times did they show that stat and talk about the stat? Or how many times have we talked about it? That Auburn is the nation's leading team in free throws attempted. And you made a good point at dinner. You said the officials absolutely know that. They absolutely know that fact. And the idea that Auburn had 23 fouls, Tennessee just 19, not blaming the officials. I do think it has something to do with it. Auburn goes 14 of 20. Tennessee goes 25 of 31. They make 9 more free throws than you. How many did you lose by, Christian? You lost by 8. They shot 11 more free throws than you.
Yeah.
You lost by 8. That's a huge factor here.
It is. I won't credit that the way that it can be credited just because of the physicality that Tennessee played. I do think Auburn played a lot softer in the paint than they usually do.
Which is kind of my point. I mean, Keyshawn Hall went 4 for 5, a guy that averages double-digit free throws a game.
Right.
Where his counterpart, Nate Amint, for Tennessee, went 12 for 15, a guy that shot 25% from the floor in this game. That's the difference. He went 4 of 16, Nate Amint did. But he drops 22 on you because he hit 12 free throws. That's the difference. That's what I'm saying. You got a taste of it on Saturday of what Auburn has been doing to teams the past 3 weeks.
Yes. But if you're Auburn, and this is not a shot at Tennessee per se, but because of the physicality that they play with, I compare it to head coaches. One that is very verbal, very outspoken, every single whistle talks and complains to the referee, versus the coach that is very subdued, stays on his side of the bench, or stays, even NBA players. Look at Draymond Green. Look at what he gets away with. And again, not trying to call him out, but look at what he gets away with, because they know that when, okay, we're calling a Warriors game, we're going to get that complaint. But then if there's another player that steps up and becomes very vocal, that leash is nowhere near as long as it is on the other side of things.
Sure.
So all of that going into Tennessee, because of the physicality that they play with, the referees know that they're expecting a very physical game, and it is in Thompson Bowling Arena or whatever.
The Food City Center. Thompson Bowling, or Thompson Bowling at the Food City Center, whichever order.
And so if you are Auburn, again, this is not a shot at Tennessee whatsoever. This is a place that you have to know you're not going to shoot more free throws than Tennessee. You have to find ways to be better, whether that comes by shooting the three, whether that comes by not allowing offensive rebounds, and you didn't do either of them.
No, you didn't, and you lose 77-69. Tennessee played good enough to win. Auburn almost played good enough to win, and that's why you got the result.
Every time until it became a one-possession game.
Yeah, but credit Tennessee for shutting that down when they needed to and being the better team on Saturday night in Knoxville. We'll talk more about Auburn, Tennessee, plus thoughts around college football, some more SEC basketball as well. Phone lines are open. Give us a call on this Monday. We'd love to hear from you here on the show. 334-321-1390. Unless your name is Brody, who cheers for Tennessee, you are not allowed. Everybody else, though, phone lines are open. Again, 334-321-1390. Or shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We're just off and running here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you being with us as we are hitting a bunch of topics here on the show today. We're talking more college basketball as the show goes on. Auburn falls to Tennessee on Saturday, 77-69, as the win streak comes to an end for Auburn, but a bye week that was coming at a good time, I think. And I think we say that just about every single week that a bye week shows up for our teams. But I do think that it is beneficial for Auburn right now. More on that as we go. But there was some news in college football today that doesn't impact Auburn anymore, but it does have Auburn ties. He has Auburn ties, I should say.
It'll affect Auburn now more in Lake Martin and walking around downtown.
As it was announced this morning, he put out a post that Gus Malzahn is hanging it up. Gus Malzahn has officially retired from coaching football after 35 years in the business. That stretches back all the way to his high school football days in the state of Arkansas. Of course, went all over the place, was a very successful coach at Auburn. And still to this day, Christian, people debate on whether Gus Malzahn ever should have been fired from Auburn, yeah. Which is fascinating because that was, what is that? Is that 7 years now that he was fired from Auburn? Because he was fired 2019, right? And so you still have people debating whether he ever should have been fired from Auburn. But he hangs it up after 35 years of being a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, again, you feel like he was beloved, is beloved in Auburn. There is no ill will whatsoever. And you know that he'll be one of those coaches that you will see hanging out at Toomer's Corner in a couple of years, and it will be nothing more than, hey, coach, how are you?
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy that loved Auburn.
Yes.
And Auburn loved him during his time here. And, of course, he had been a coordinator. He was the head coach at UCF, took the offensive coordinator job at Florida State for a year, but has hung it up. And he's one of those guys, we're about to get to the phone lines too, he was one of those not old school, older generation, but he was not this generation of football coach.
No, he was somebody that did not want to have to really take on that responsibility, which is why I think he took that step down to be the offensive coordinator. And yeah, whether it was just time to hang it up or realize that he didn't necessarily enjoy it the same way, he decided to call it a career, and credit to him.
I mean, best of luck to him in retirement.
And for those that care, Mike Norvell will go back to calling plays for Florida State in 2026.
Oh boy. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. Let's get to it now. Slack, you're on the line, my man. What's going on?
What's up, guys?
What's up?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say I think he stayed a contract too long.
At Auburn?
Yes.
Why is that? I think that's a popular opinion, but why do you think so?
I think his philosophy as an offensive coordinator, everybody had already caught on to it, and he didn't make any changes to it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the most popular.
I was hoping he could come in and add something to it, but it never got any better.
Yeah, I think that's the main reasoning for Auburn fans, or just Gus Malzahn fans, or wherever he coached. That was kind of that main mentality of, man, back in 2012, 2013, when he had that lightning offense, nobody else ran it, nobody else really knew how to, but then when 2017, 2018 came around and these defenses practiced against it every single week, there was no wrinkle. There was no plan B. There were eight plays that had two different ways that they could go about it, and as soon as they figured it out, it was done.
Yeah. When other defenses figured out that they know exactly, well, hell, you could sit in the stands and just try to figure what they're going to run.
Yeah.
Slack, you don't miss those third and 13 screen passes to the near side?
Well, I don't miss those third and one throwing the ball 40 yards down the field.
Or second and 12 and commit to the run up the middle. Yeah, good times, yeah, huh? Good times.
Even in this day and time with the offenses that are putting up numbers in the SEC, his record probably would be worse, guys.
Yeah.
If you really think about it.
It might be. And, I mean, look at what he did, you know, at UCF and even his 1 year at Florida State. I mean, those offenses I don't think were just dominating or blowing college football away. I do think he adjusted a little bit, but I think he had just started to kind of lose the touch of the game. And again, I think it's a good time for him to hang it up, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Yeah. Basketball talk.
Sure.
I think, just my opinion, playing 9-10 guys early helps your team. Once you get to where you get into the tournament, that's when you cut back on playing time.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, with all these guys, seven guys playing 25, 30 minutes, that's why we can't make a jump shot, because they're tired. What happened to the 6-7 JUCO All-American? Now he can't get a minute on the court. What happened to the 5-star point guard that we signed? Now he can't get a minute on the court. What happened to the best shooter we probably got on the team, the kid from Huntsville? Can't even get a minute on the court.
Yeah.
What happened? And I know that's Steven's philosophy. But in this day and time when you think guys gonna stay around, but NIL, 1 year is the most you're going to get out of guys.
It's a good point.
So, with that being said, we're going to be in rebuilding mode again next year.
Yeah.
Unless we go out and sign a Duke signing class, we're going to be in worse shape next year. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Slack. A loaded question for sure in reference to Caden Magwood, Abdul Bashir, right? Emeka Opurum's injured, right? He had the health stuff, so he's out. Simon Walker is another one that is he was referencing there. And
both him and Bashir have dealt through minor injuries that kept them out of a lot of the non-conference games, and I feel like maybe it was just, okay, well, we've now hit our little stride. We're not going to change things up. But I do agree that when you have seven guys that you feel like you can really, really go to in today's era of college basketball with how much mobility there is, how much tempo, how much speed, and then you have to combine that with the physicality of the SEC, it definitely takes a toll on you.
He's absolutely right. And it is frustrating because Auburn did such a good job of recruiting freshmen like Magwood and Simon Walker, and those guys are not even touching the floor. And to Slack's point as we get to break, come March, this team could be completely pooped. They could be wiped out. They could be exhausted. Because look at the minute totals, man. 33, 31, 29. That's a lot of basketball. That's a lot of basketball. So good points there, Slack. We appreciate you calling in. We'll talk more football and basketball when we come back.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And phone lines are open. Again, if you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Do want to put a bow really quickly on the Gus Malzahn conversation again. Gus has announced his retirement today after 35 years of coaching football, from the high school ranks to the offensive coordinator ranks to head coaching ranks all over the place. 35 years, Gus Malzahn has announced his retirement. And again, I do think it is fascinating that to this day, right, he was fired in December of 2020. And here we are over 5 years later, which I don't know personally if that feels like it was longer than that or shorter than that. Because initially I'm like, man, it's been a long time. But then it's like, it's only been 5 years.
Yeah. When you read 20, even when you said 19 and then read that it was 2020, for some reason, I guess I just go back to the really, really good side of things, and my mind immediately goes to 2017, 2018. And so I feel like that was...
Yeah, because 19, Auburn went 9-3.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You beat Alabama.
That was Bo's freshman year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you beat Alabama. God. When Auburn lost to Minnesota in the Outback Bowl.
Yeah.
Oh, brutal. And
what was the final in that game?
I don't remember. Oh, dear. It's gone. I don't know. It's gone. It was not pretty.
Noah Igbinoghene kickoff return. Was that the only touchdown offensively that Auburn had? Just the start of the game that I remember, and then it just went downhill?
2019 Outback Bowl, that was... No, that's Iowa, Mississippi State.
It'd be 2020.
I would have been the 2020 Outback Bowl. Let me see. That was 31-24.
Okay, no. So we did score, but I just don't
mind. That game was terrible, man. Oh, yeah, that's terrible. Yeah, so there you go. So he, again, to fire December 13th of 2020. Malzahn was fired as Auburn's head football coach at the conclusion of his eighth winning season. Listen to this. In case you forgot, his record at Auburn, Gus Malzahn's record as the head coach at Auburn, 68-35. Auburn paid him $21 million to walk out the door. And it's been broken ever since, pretty much, which is why people argue whether he should or should not have been fired. Slack called in the previous segment and said he stayed for one extension too long, which is a popular opinion, right? You talked about 2018. That's when Auburn went 7-5 and blasted Purdue in the Music City Bowl. That was Stidham, right, with that team. So, I don't know. There's a lot of people that think he should have stayed even longer than he did. There are people who think he shouldn't have gotten the last extension to where Auburn did owe him $21 million when they fired him. But
what was his record, final record at Auburn?
His final record at Auburn was 68-35.
Since then, Auburn is 28-33.
Ooh. Auburn is 5 games under 500 since he left.
Auburn would have to, I mean...
Auburn would have to go undefeated for the next 3 seasons.
Well, say one more time. I'm sorry.
68 wins, 35 losses.
You have
68
to go,
wins, 35 losses.
You have to go 40-2 over your next 42 games to get that record.
God. Oh, no. Don't worry, Golish. Everything's fine, brother. Everything's good.
No pressure.
Oh, man.
That hurts. Well, football news for this year, if you care to think about it. Auburn opens up as a 7.5-point favorite against Baylor, their home game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah, the home game in Atlanta.
They are. They are over a touchdown favorites early on. And do I have to remind you who the Baylor quarterback is going to be this year?
You don't have to remind me. You can remind our listeners.
Do you remember?
It's Lagway.
Testing. Yeah, DJ Lagway.
Unfortunately, I do remember.
The Texas native will be the quarterback for Baylor. So that is who Auburn will see in Atlanta in game one, where they are, again, over a touchdown favorite as of right now.
I did see that, and that kind of blew my mind. Also, the idea that we have spreads late January, early February, like, come on, you don't know. You don't know.
Their remark back to us over the past 3 years of screaming that is, well, now we know the teams because they can't go anywhere.
Which, I mean, yes, but...
So,
Vegas, man. Vegas. Whatever. I ain't buying it.
It's wild. And people have already taken it.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's going to change between now and then. It's going to change. That's unbelievable.
It's wild. Yeah, well, there was our brief football news for the show. We did see one other thing most recently with Lee Scott Academy, and I guess I'll talk news with Lee Scott here for just a moment. Congratulations to Mr. Max Shiver, who we just found out has committed to Jacksonville State, which is really, really cool. Lee Scott, offensive lineman, who I've gotten to know over the years, again, will be making his way to Jacksonville, Alabama, following Mr. The old Auburn. Oh, my gosh, what was his name? Why can't I think of it right now? Head coach, Jacksonville State.
Right now?
Yes.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot, too.
He was the Auburn. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Charles Kelly.
Okay, there we go. For some reason, I was thinking.
Sorry, I was too in-depth and trying to remember if Gus Malzahn was the coach during the COVID season, and he was.
He was.
I totally forgot that he was here during COVID.
Yeah, that was really pain. But no, he is following Charles Kelly to Jacksonville State, which is really, really cool. And on the basketball side of things, Lee Scott Academy, we told you the girls had a coin flip to see if they would host or if Glenwood would host in the area tournament. There was no question on whether or not the boys would host, but Coach Corey Harrison won the coin flip.
All right.
So Lee Scott Academy, varsity girls and varsity boys will host the area tournament. Again, you can check out all the Lee Scott pages for all the specific timings, but it will be Lee Scott playing Dadeville on Friday night, both the girls and the boys. And if both teams advance the championship, I guess the championship regardless will be on Monday. But hopefully the Lee Scott varsity girls and varsity boys are playing inside Sanford Gymnasium for their area championship on Monday evening. So really, really cool that in 2 years in the AHSAA, the varsity girls and the varsity boys have hosted both times.
AHSAA for now. I hope they get that figured out. And it sounds like they're going to. It sounds like they're trying, right? We talked about that on Friday, but
how there's no agreement, or at least there's no decision as of now, but
they want to stay together is what it sounded like from the private school.
There's basically a
group. I don't know what other word to use.
It's almost like there's a mini lockout right now.
Basically.
That you're trying to come to a decision. Yeah, otherwise,
basically,
we'll back out or do whatever else we need to do.
Yeah, that's nasty stuff. Auburn High basketball, very quickly before we get to the phone lines. Auburn High varsity girls will host the area tournament at Auburn High School. Our area tournaments are not until next week. We wrap up regular season play this week with non-area games. Auburn High girls will host at Auburn High. Boys, we get to make another trip to Phoenix City. Woo. So boys get to play the area tournament at Central against Opelika,
yeah,
where we lost on Friday with the season on the line.
So a regular season split and game three will send the loser home.
God.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah, that's just so dumb. So now two sports in a row, Auburn-Opelika will compete with each other in postseason play where the winner moves on and the loser's season is over because of the state semifinals for football. Jeez. And now the area semifinals of basketball. So good stuff there. Let's get to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. We're throwing you on hot. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Yeah, this is Pat.
What's going on, Pat?
Hey, man, I just was going to... I agree with what you said. Normally in college basketball, you know, seven players is not enough and everybody will hit like the wall. But it makes no sense in reality because that same player, let's say Jani Broome, who played last year, can only play 30 minutes a game because 30 minutes a game is killer, twice a week, 60 minutes a week. But if he goes to the NBA and he actually gets on a team and he's a starter, then he's playing 34 minutes in a 48-minute game. You know, four or five times a week.
It's a good point. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I guess I haven't really thought about it that way, but yeah, that makes sense.
No, that's what I was always thinking. Okay, they can't play more than 25 minutes. You know, I love the way Bruce Pearl did that, you know, a couple of years ago, having 10 guys playing 20 minutes all out. But it makes no sense how, okay, well, if you were, you know, the guy that went pro, like say DiBiase right now is playing. He's playing 34 minutes a game twice, you know, 36 minutes a game, mm-hmm. you know, twice a week. But next year he'll be playing, if he's good enough, you know, he's starting, he'll be playing 34 minutes. But they play 3 to 4 games every single week.
Sure, yeah.
Every other day they play a game.
It's the Cooper Flagg, the perfect example of that, of him being a starter for the Mavericks playing, yeah, 34, 35 minutes a game.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like then we go, okay, well, then we go to the SC tournament, and then we watch our guys play three days in a row. And so it's like I really don't think fatigue is not like that. I feel like it's more like they say that like right now Tahad's in the sophomore slump. I feel like it's more mental. I don't think it's exhaustion from a physical standpoint. I think it's more mental. They're just not used to mentally having to think about it is more what I think it is more.
It's a good point. Yeah. With Tahad, I can't speak for him, I guess, because I don't know. But at least looking at it, Pat, it's mental. It's in his head. There's no doubt.
Yeah. He's totally in his head. And I hate people getting on him because, you know, there's no question he's trying to do his best when he's out there. But, I feel like the good thing about this team is that we're coming close. We're beating teams. You know, Alabama got smoked at Florida, and we beat Florida by double digits. So I feel like our team has the potential on any given day to win. I feel like it's just and we're doing this without Tahad shooting good. So if Tahad gets back into where he did last year, shooting 36% or so, mm-hmm. I feel like that's gonna take us to another level. So I feel like right now there's two guys that's in their head, and it's Elijah Freeman. He went on a slump there for a minute. And so if he gets back on track, then I feel like the, you know, the, I think the sky's the limit for this team, you know, assuming that, that they do get back on track.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you on that.
All right, guys.
Appreciate it, Pat. Yeah, appreciate the call, man. Good to hear from you. It's been a minute. 334-321-1390. Several things to address there. A, the NBA thing is interesting because – he is on to something in terms of guys preparing to play at the next level and preparing to play more minutes, right? And I don't think Auburn at this point in the season looks to be tired or physically exhausted or anything like that. You have the bye week here this week, which is good, right? You come off a tough loss. You're preparing for Alabama. I think it is coming at a good time, but it's nowhere near what we've seen in the past, Christian, of, man, this team, I mean, it's late February and the bye week's finally here. Mm-hmm. This team is exhausted. They need a week off. I think it's an okay bye week, but I don't think Auburn has reached that point yet of, man, they look like they can't hang for 40 minutes. So I don't think the team is there yet, but to his point about the NBA, there's a fine line because I don't want to say Stephen Pearl's not concerning himself with that idea, but I don't know. That's more on the individual player rather than the coaching staff at Auburn preparing them to play that many minutes in the league.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, and I don't know how true or how much I truly believe this, but you feel like on a nightly basis there's more physicality in the SEC than there is on a nightly basis in the NBA. And so
I would say so.
You don't have to, I guess, prepare yourself for the physicality from that standpoint of the run and gun style that the NBA gives you, especially if you are one of those guards or even just, I mean, the positionless basketball that you play. But yeah, it is the thought of playing an extra 30, 35 minutes a game every single week, if not more than that, if you have a back-to-back, right? I mean, you don't really think about that in the NBA, but you have them every now and then, and so it is a very interesting thought on that side of things.
You travel a whole lot more, too,
yeah,
in the NBA.
But again, just that thought as a whole is something I hadn't really given.
Here's a comparison really quickly. Jabari Smith averages 35 minutes a game in the NBA for the Houston Rockets. He was not playing 35 minutes a game at Auburn. Mm-hmm. He was probably playing 30 to 33, but 35 minutes a game in an 82-game schedule is much different than, 32, 33. The most minutes on Auburn's team right now is Keyshawn Hall at 33. So 33 minutes for, 40 games a year compared to 35 minutes for 82 games a year? Yeah, there's absolutely some correlation there to Pat's point. But he also brought up Elijah Freeman. And that one's fascinating to me because Tahan Pettiford, sophomore slump, I don't even think is a correct way to describe it because I think it's more than that. I think we're seeing a guy who was so impactful as a freshman last year just have so much difficulty on the offensive end of the floor and everybody's in agreement. I don't think he has just given up. I don't think he's checked out. I don't think he's fully engaged. But I think a lot of that is coming from almost being defeated and being like, man, I mean, what do I got to do? Go back to the Tennessee game Saturday. What was it, back-to-back threes that he took that rattled in and out three or four times?
Yeah,
what I would call counts in the arcade on my broadcast. I mean, where it goes halfway down and pops out, and it's like, man, what do I do,
One of those falls, and all of a sudden, it's not even joy, but it's just relief. Much less if you're able to knock down both of them in back-to-back possessions, and you cut the lead to two or cut the lead to three, all of a sudden, Tennessee calls timeouts. Imagine what that boost would do.
But Tahan Pettiford didn't forget how to play basketball.
No.
He's not playing well right now. But Elijah Freeman is a different story, because Elijah Freeman is playing at a different level than he did last year. He's in a new place, a new system, a new everything, and he's just not as, is it fair to say he's not experienced? Not really, but
I don't think you have the creative freedom that you do at the D2 level at Lincoln Memorial.
When you were the guy.
When you were the guy, there were just set plays drawn up for you, or it was just, all right, go get a bucket. Go get downhill.
Yeah.
Now there's a little bit more of a scouting report, or a lot a bit more of a scouting report. That being said, if you told me in year one at Auburn, a sophomore and Elijah Freeman would shoot 47% and average 10-5.
It's good enough.
I would take it in a heartbeat.
You really can't in 25 minutes of play. I mean, but to Pat's point, and I know we got to get to break, you get a little bit more out of Elijah Freeman, then you're really playing ball. You get what you expected out of Tahan Pettiford, then you're really playing ball. You get consistency out of Kevin Overton, then you're really playing ball. And
and you get Murph fully healthy, playing with how Jovic is playing too.
Mm-hmm. And to Slack's point, just playing together on a string and playing more than five, six, seven guys, I mean, you have a chance to really go to the next level. And I think that's what has Auburn fans at least optimistic right now, is this team, funny enough, hasn't peaked. They can get better. They can still play better on any given night than they did on Saturday against Tennessee.
And weirdly enough, although you feel like the overall mentality and the overall message of Auburn sports kind of as a whole over the past 4 or 5 years is, you know, we didn't play great, but we still had our chances and we just couldn't get it done, right? You had that one opportunity. I mean, that was a storyline of football this past year, if not even the year before that, and then basketball a little bit now that you're working into it. But this team has a little bit of an asterisk just because it's Stephen Pearl, it's year one, there's so many moving parts, so many changes, to where I think an 8-point loss at Tennessee, while we don't give credit here on the show for quality losses, is something that is not going to diminish confidence whatsoever.
I agree.
Especially building on that past statement that I made of Auburn still had plenty of chances. Maybe not to overall win the game, but they were an 8-0 run away from taking the lead and all of a sudden making it a very different contest at the 12-minute mark, at the 8-minute mark, at the 6-minute mark, at the 4-minute mark. They just couldn't get it done. But there's still confidence that needs to come from games like that.
And now you have a bye week and Alabama coming to your house on Saturday. Doesn't get any better than that. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We've got, I don't know, about 60 seconds. We went long in the last segment, but we've had good phone calls so far today, so we appreciate you being a part of the show. You can do so as well by calling 334-321-1390. And hour number one is in the book, so stick around. We've got more coming up in hour number two. We're going to zoom out a little bit, look around the SEC, what's going on with the standings, also what Auburn has remaining on their SEC schedule as we are about halfway through the SEC slate. And then Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us at 3:30 on the phone lines as well. So give us a call, shoot us a text. We want you to be a part of the Monday edition of the show. Hour number one in the books. Stick around. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us as we get started in the second 60 minutes of today's show. If you missed any of the first hour, we talked a lot of Auburn basketball as they fall on the road to Tennessee on Saturday, 77-69. We talked about why, and we talked about what Auburn can do to bounce back. Plus, a little football news as Gus Malzahn announces his retirement from coaching football, so talked a little bit about that. Plus, we had some great phone calls in the first hour as well. So all of that was in the first 60 minutes. If you missed that or any other of our shows, there's a couple of ways that you can go back and listen to the podcast version. You can download the Radio Alabama app. That is the way to stream the show every single day, any of our six radio stations, or you can click on the podcast center there, or just go to our station website and click on that podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, going to take a little bit of time looking at all of the games that happened last weekend, games inside the SEC, games outside the SEC, games in the top 25, because my goodness, were there some really, really fun games. Not necessarily the overloaded slate that we have seen over the past, but how many times did we say that in football where, man, there's not seven top 25 matchups, but we come on here on Monday and talk about how fun the weekend was. There was a lot of really, really fun games this weekend that we want to be able to dive into. And then a look at the SEC standings, as you are now, again, every team, or I guess Auburn, rather, is halfway through after the midweek. Most teams, if not every other team, will be halfway through their SEC slate. And so what do the standings look like? Are there some teams that have overperformed? Are there some teams, yes, that have underperformed? We're going to dive all into that here in the first 30 minutes of hour number two. And then Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us, as he does every single Monday at 3:30. We'll recap the Auburn-Tennessee game. Maybe a couple questions along the football side of things now that the transfer portal is completely finished, or you would imagine so, for the Auburn Tigers, and just all things Auburn. Some of our big updates coming up tonight. Auburn women's basketball, we'll get thoughts on that as well. All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yeah, so until we get to Hillman, phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the show, call in and give us your thoughts on Auburn basketball, Auburn football transfer portal, Auburn baseball that's coming up in just a couple of weeks. Tigers play in less than 2 weeks. Whew. They open up the season on February 13th. So if you have thoughts on that or anything else, you can give us a call right now at 334-321-1390. Again, that number, 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067.
You can now just correlate baseball with freezing cold weather and then give it 2 weeks and wishing it was freezing cold weather again.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Thankfully for Auburn High, we don't have – I think my first broadcast is the 27th of February. So hopefully whatever this crap is that's outside goes away. I like the cold. People who listen to this show or everydayers know, I like the cold. I love being outside in this.
Is it the on the linebackers?
Or on the linebackers, yeah. You
now
guys
that it's
know.
Baseball season, is it on the line – drives?
On the line drives?
No, that's both of our shows.
Ah, yeah, those people that listen to both. You are on the line drivers. Yeah. Whew, that was rough. I love this weather.
Golf season, you can just call it the slicers from what Jacob gives you.
I mean, true. Yeah. If you want to find my ball, just go right. Cart path on the right? Cool, you're halfway there.
great cart path golfer. Yeah, when the
and you best believe I take claim when that sucker bounces down the cart path and gives me an extra 25, 30 yards. You better believe it. And look, it doesn't matter if it's in my fairway or the other fairway. A clean shot's a clean shot. Clean look is
fairway
a clean look.
Fairway finder, baby.
Fairway is a fairway.
Especially at Pines when you can hit it into eight different ones and you're still in the fairway and you still have a look. I mean, that's what better way to do it.
Head on a swivel out there. Anyway.
That being said, new drivers.
Oh, dude, yeah, it's
gonna
Jacob
be, Goins is
it's
back,
gonna be
baby.
On. It's gonna be on. Big Bertha is gonna get me right, man. I'm so excited for that. But I am excited for a little bit warmer weather because calling baseball in this is just not fun. It's just when you just sit there and you don't move, like it's just there's.
You get, oh gosh, you get to the point where it's 14-6 in the bottom of the fifth inning, and it's just a walk-a-thon. And the only thing that you're saying is, and the 2-1, ball 3.
because you're shivering, the wind is blowing, you're having to hold down all your papers and your score sheets and things.
Oh, man. Goodness.
Once you get through the first 2 weeks, two and a half weeks, then it changes, and then you're like, now you're sweating to death sitting out there, and baseball, man. So awesome. So that happens this month. Baseball was played this month. High school and college baseball played the month of
February. And spring training.
Get started
late in February, too.
Yeah. Crazy that we're already to that point of the season. But what else was crazy is some of these results in college basketball this weekend, Christian. In the SEC, outside of the SEC, biggest result in your mind? What game did you bring today? A little show and tell, right? What did you bring for the class to display to everyone over the weekend?
If it was the game, the best game, it was not one that was on Saturday, and I don't feel like that would be allowed. I don't feel like we're allowed to start with the Sunday appetizer that made everybody smile here in Auburn, Alabama. I feel like you gotta go in order. We will go in order. So we will start with Michigan and Michigan State. That was the Friday evening game that we knew was going to be really, really fun. The third-ranked Michigan Wolverines versus the seventh-ranked Spartans. And my goodness, what a job Dusty May continues to do. And the photos and the videos that Michigan now is using of him walking into that full wide out arena, being called every single name in the book and going and sitting down at his locker or again, sitting down in his chair on the bench and just crossing his legs, spreading out his arms. I mean,
smiling. All the fans behind him. Dusty's such a good one, man. He's such a good coach. And Michigan's a damn good team. They're so good.
We talked about it. If you could stop Jeremiah Fears, that was Jeremy Fears. That would be your one thing that you really need to do if you're Michigan. And if you look at the stat sheet and you become a box score viewer, you wouldn't really think that they did. He had 31 and he had seven assists as well. That being said, I can't believe I'm discrediting a guy that had 31 and 7, but more so crediting Michigan in the final 8 minutes of the game. I think when I looked at it last, he had like 28 and 6. And so over the last stretch of 8 minutes, he didn't have that big of an impact. And that was the reason that Michigan was able to kind of stretch this lead out. They end up winning by a dozen when they were a point and a half. If not, it was a toss-up game by the time this basketball game tipped off. And it just goes to show you how good this Michigan team is as a whole is. Yaxel had 26 and 12. Elliot Cadeau, who is also, again, one of the best point guards in the country, had 17 and 6. And this team is just all around really freaking good.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michigan got up by 17 or 18 at one point. The lead was 16 at the half on the road in East Lansing, where they still win it by 12. And, yeah, Michigan, they're the best team in college basketball.
Putting them over Arizona right now?
I think so. I think this weekend did it for me, winning that way in that fashion. And Michigan State's a very good team. Do I think Michigan State is top 10, maybe, right? Arizona goes on the road and takes care of Arizona State 87-74 on Saturday. That was a tie game at the half.
Yeah.
For an Arizona State team that's 2-7 at Big 12.
Arizona State, I remember I stayed up late to watch this contest. That was one of the ones you said that you weren't. This was a couple weeks ago. It was like the 10 o'clock start on ESPN. You were like, yeah, I will not be watching that one.
Correct.
But that, I think Arizona State had the lead until like the under 16, and they finally realized that Arizona had a co-appete that was like, okay, do what you do. And
he's
ended up
kind of good.
Yes. And again, in that contest as well, had 21. Braden Burries, who is another, again, really, really good freshman point guard for Arizona. You might not be hearing his name too much longer in college basketball. I think if you're comparing Arizona and Michigan, I think Arizona I would trust five out on the floor. Michigan has that lightning ability with one or two guys that could go and give you 30 on any given night. But if it was five on five and you had to pick those guys, I think I would still stick with Arizona.
But man,
would it be fun to watch.
I'm going Michigan because they're battle-tested. I'm going Michigan off the eye test. That's what I'm going off of. Resume and eye test for me. When I watch those two teams separately,
Arizona with wins over Florida, UConn, Auburn, Alabama. I mean, yeah, those aren't very good ones.
I mean, back in in November, December, sure. But who's the last? When's the last quad one win that Arizona had? BYU was one. And then was UCF considered a quad one game?
Since it's on the road, place, probably, I would imagine so.
But that's probably it.
And then TCU.
Yeah.
And then Utah at the time, I believe, was ranked. But
I don't know if they are
again.
I just think Michigan is. But what's so funny is they're two different teams.
Very much so.
They're two completely different teams.
We can come back to this conversation in a couple of weeks because look at Arizona's schedule. They host Oklahoma State in the midweek, and then it's at Kansas, home for Texas Tech, home for BYU, and at Houston.
One game break at Baylor, and then number 11, Kansas, number 7, Iowa State. We're going to find out real quick. We're going to find out real quick how good Arizona really is. And they're not going to go undefeated in that stretch, but if they handle business and trip up once, even twice, but still handle business, then yeah, I think Arizona's a great team. I just think Michigan is the number one team in the country and a team that I just don't think you and I talk about very often, and I don't know why. UConn? The 21-1 Huskies. I think it's the conference they play in right now, which
and their wins haven't necessarily been
pretty
overly impressive, but yeah, their one loss is a 4-point loss at a neutral site against that Arizona team. But took care of business against Kansas. They beat Florida as well. I'd like to see that game in a rematch because Florida's again continuing to find their stride, but
it hurts my heart to look at the Big East right now. That conference is just not – it's not what it needs to be.
Not at all. Butler's not what it needs to be. Xavier isn't. Marquette definitely isn't. Creighton, my goodness.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
But good teams take care of business against the teams they need to take care of business against.
And they still have one of the best coaches in the country. So, but again, game on Saturday.
One of.
Yes. I don't care what he says. Again, what game did you bring for show and tell today?
From
Saturday. We talked about Michigan State, but you had to pick one game from Saturday.
One from Saturday?
Yeah.
It's the one that we watched in here because our power was out all Saturday.
Yeah.
It was Kansas and BYU. And
that game was crazy.
What a wild game that it was. You saw why Kansas is so good. You saw why BYU, honestly, is really, really good. Richie Saunders had one of the games of his life, 33 points on 6 of 14 from behind the arc. Robert White added 18 in there as well. A.J. DeBonsa had 17 after not shooting for what was it, the first 8.5 minutes of the contest. You saw Flory Badunga have a really solid game, a quiet game, had 16 and 6, but that's, again, almost above his averages just because this Kansas team can be so well-rounded, and you go look at that. I mean, all five starters had double figures. Bryson Tiller had 21. Melvin Council had 15, didn't shoot it well, but was almost the only Kansas Jayhawk that did not shoot it well. Trey White is also a really, really good point guard, one of the better shooting point guards in the country, and you saw why Darren Patterson in the first half is the number one projected overall pick. Had 18 points, 6 of 8 shooting. Didn't play like the final 16 minutes of the game because of cramping. So they kept him out, which is why BYU was kind of able to slowly chip away at that lead. But credit to Kansas for finding a way to get the job done at Allen Fieldhouse. That was the 1,000th game that was played there, and yeah. I think that was their 856th win. So you talk about a really, really tough place to play.
That's wild.
It's Allen Fieldhouse, which we saw before the game. I mean, the place was absolutely rocking.
They were going insane in that place, man. And if BYU doesn't go down by 20 at the half, I mean, they made it interesting down the stretch and showed they are still a talented team, but that Kansas squad has more weapons than I've seen for Bill Self in quite some time. So that was a good one to bring for show and tell.
I have a
today.
Feeling I know your show and tell game.
I think it's the only other main highlight of the day, and it's Mark Pope saving his job again, going on the road and taking down Arkansas. 85-77, Cats of Kentucky. Big Blue Nation goes into Bud Walton, into Fayetteville, into the new home of John Calipari, and take down top 15 Arkansas 85-77.
We texted our good buddy Lance of, again, Locked On Kentucky, but does a lot of work here as well, after the 80-55 loss to Vanderbilt. And we actually texted him. I said, "Hey, man, are you alive today?" On the line is asking. And he texted us about an hour later and said, "I was taking a nap." So don't ask him what his sleep schedule is.
Yeah.
But then we said, "Give us a one-line quote for how Kentucky fans are feeling right now." And this is before, again, this game on Saturday. And he said, "Lost, period." Then dove into it and said, "They're embarrassed over how little effort this team is giving, and there's nothing to look forward to. There are zero recruits in their 2026 class. The fan base can't seem to agree on what the solution is, and they all just seem absolutely lost." And then you go on the road and you solve all of that by beating Arkansas.
By beating Arkansas, who was a 15th ranked team in the country, and Kentucky drops 85 on their heads. Malachi Moreno had 11. Colin Chandler had 13. Denzel Aberdeen had 10. Otega Owe found his game and dropped 24, 8-3 on Arkansas. I mean,
and tempers flared in that game too.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. The idea that you had two Arkansas players shoot half of their shots. Trayvon Brazil goes 5 of 10. He had a good game. 5 of 10, 16 points, 8 boards, 2 assists.
Cutting you off there, why does Trayvon Brazil have 10 field goal attempts in a game?
Yeah, that's criminal.
That should be not doubled, but, I mean, that should be a guy that shoots 15 to 18 field goals a game.
He shot 10 field goals in this game. 6 of them came from behind the arc.
Yeah, that's...
He's dangerous from out there, but he needs more paint touches. That's what we're getting at here. It's because Darius Acuff shot the ball 20 times. That's why. And Kentucky, in one of the more up-and-down seasons I think I've ever seen. Is everything okay now? Are they kneeling down to Mark Pope now? Are they praising him once again? Is he the savior of Kentucky basketball? Because let's not forget how SEC play has gone for Kentucky. I read this on Friday. I want to read it to you again as we go to break. SEC play for Kentucky. The Cats started 0-2 in SEC play. They lost at Alabama, which, you know, whatever. Alabama's a better team. Then Missouri came to Rupp Arena and beat Kentucky. They're 0-2, and they lost to Missouri. And the world was crumbling around them. Everything was terrible. Kentucky fans were burning their jerseys outside, okay? What do the Cats do in response? You know, just rip off 5 straight wins in the SEC, including Tennessee and Texas and Ole Miss, 3 tournament teams.
And a buzzer beater against LSU.
I forgot about that.
But so again,
on a 5-game win streak.
But again, credit to you, which is a very comparable W to Auburn and South Carolina of you don't think about that anymore. You go and you look at the schedule, okay, it's a W.
A win is a win,
yeah.
Especially on the road in the SEC. So on a 5-game win streak, they head up to Nashville, and that game that you mentioned, just get embarrassed, 80-55. How do they respond? They go on the road again in the SEC and beat Arkansas with all the buzz and all the drama and everything there, and they beat the Hogs 85-77.
Is Kentucky not the most perfect example of what SEC basketball is this year? Because don't look at it now. Kentucky's 6-3 in the SEC.
They're right there. They are 5th in the conference. They're 5th. They're fighting for a double bye in Nashville. For a team whose fan base wants their head coach fired on a day-to-day basis.
Just another night in the SEC.
So that's the game I present to you, is Kentucky over Arkansas this past weekend. Speaking of those SEC standings, we'll talk about that and where the conference is right now.
Because thankfully, nothing happened on Sunday.
True. Yeah. There was no drama on Sunday afternoon in Gainesville.
It wasn't dramatic.
It wasn't. it was a word I probably shouldn't use. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about whatever you want to use to describe what happened in Gainesville.
They beat them anyways.
We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk Bama, Florida, SEC standings, and more. That's here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we are back here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break, where then Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will be joining us. So we'll get all sorts of updates from him, his thoughts on basketball as Auburn loses to Tennessee on Saturday, bye week this week, so no midweek game, and then Alabama coming to town on Saturday. Plus a little Auburn women's basketball as the Lady Tigers will be here on ESPN 106.7 this evening. 5:45 broadcast starts, 6 o'clock. Tip with Auburn Ole Miss with Britt Bowen. That game in Birmingham was supposed to be at Ole Miss, but Oxford's still in a bad spot with weather and things. The campus has been shut down for weeks. I mean, it's crazy stuff there in Oxford. So they moved that game to Birmingham, but we'll still have the broadcast for you here on ESPN 106.7. So we'll talk to Hillman about that, plus his thoughts on everything else going on around Auburn athletics. But do you watch anything yesterday, Christian? Do you watch any basketball yesterday? There was a couple NBA games on, and I think there may have been a Big 12 game or something around college basketball.
Yeah.
Did you happen to watch Florida-Alabama yesterday?
A little bit.
A little bit? You probably turned it off about halftime, right? That's what most people did. Because of the beatdown that Florida handed out. Illinois-Nebraska was solid. Illinois goes on the road to beat Nebraska in a top 10 game. Iowa State routes Kansas State, who's terrible. Purdue routes Maryland, who is also terrible. And Florida routes Alabama, who is not terrible.
No, they're not. I think that just showed you what Florida can do at their peak. And my goodness, when you look at the trees that we've called them for Florida for a couple of years now, but I mean, Condon, Hout, and Chinyelu absolutely dominated. 72 points in the paint.
They almost outscored Alabama's total by just points in the
Florida
paint.
Scored 100 points and made three threes.
Alabama scored 77 points as a team.
Condon had 25 and 7. Thomas Houck had 22 and 5. Ruben Chinyelu had 14 and 17. And that man had one assignment.
Yep.
And it was Charles Bediako, who did have 6 points and, of course, had seven rebounds.
Yeah.
But fouled out, and the Swamp went nuts.
As they should.
After chanting G League dropout all afternoon.
And Todd Golden was right. He said, we'll beat
him
anyway.
If he plays, we'll just beat him anyways. And then in the postgame press conference, responded to what Nate Oates said about how their offense has success when you stand in the paint for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds. Todd Golden said, I don't know, it looked like we sat in the paint for about 2 seconds and scored every time. Damn right.
Yeah,
you did.
Good job, Todd. Attaboy. Auburn fans may not be the biggest Todd Golden fans since he knocked him out in the Final Four, but they tipped their cap yesterday afternoon in Gainesville. 100-77, Florida takes down Alabama. We'll put a pin in that and talk Auburn athletics with Jacob Hillman right after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we also appreciate this guy for joining us and being with us as he is every Monday at 3:30. It's our man Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Happy Monday, sir. Happy February as well. Hope all is good and you're staying warm on that side of town.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy Monday to you guys. And looking forward to today's conversation.
Well, man, there is so much going on and things to talk about. And, of course, we have to start with basketball, where Auburn, on a three-game win streak, heading into the game against Tennessee. And it was a game where fans felt kind of up in the air. Some fans were expecting a win. Some fans were expecting a loss. Others just didn't really know how to feel, win or lose. And Auburn, of course, falls short on the road to Tennessee in a game that they had their chances, Hillman. They just couldn't quite pull it through. What'd you see in Knoxville on Saturday?
You're exactly right, Jacob. Going into this game with the win streak and everything, I think a good bit of pressure was taken off this team because you felt good about where you stood in the SEC and with your resume and everything. You bounced back from the 1-3 start in conference play. So some of the pressure had been taken off. It would have been nice to win that and win that fifth straight game. But I think overall, the most pressure was on Coach Pearl returning to his alma mater in the place that he played college basketball under his father for the first time as a head coach. So overall, I think that might have shown in the first 15 minutes or so of that game. And Coach Pearl talked about it extensively on the Regis Bank postgame show with Voice of the Tigers, Andy Bertram, how his team got pumped and they just were not really ready for that physical challenge in the aspect that Tennessee. So you go back to the Florida game the week before, a Florida team that just beat Alabama mercilessly and scored 72 points in the paint, got so many offensive rebounds. That same Florida team a week prior didn't grab a single offensive rebound for the first 15 minutes of the game against Auburn. The script was flipped against Tennessee to the Tigers, and that was kind of the hole that Auburn dug itself into and really almost was able to dig itself out of, but unfortunately just couldn't quite get over that hump and take a lead in this game to really set the tone. And I thought the shooting was obviously poor. If some of those shots had fallen, who knows what we're talking about right now. But Coach Pearl said it as much that this is a team that shouldn't be shooting 31 threes in the game. It's just not Auburn's game. I would go as far as say if Auburn's shooting 11 more threes than free throws, Auburn had 31 threes in this game and 20 free throw attempts, Auburn's not going to win very many games in that way. So that's just Auburn needs to get back to his bread and butter of attacking the rim and drawing contact at the rim.
And I misspoke, Auburn on a four-game winning streak going into that game against Tennessee. And so which one do you put more stock in, Jacob? Do you put more stock in Auburn's four-game win streak against South Carolina, Ole Miss, Florida, and Texas, or the loss against Tennessee on Saturday and the way that it happened? More positivity on the win streak or more negativity on the loss on Saturday?
I think definitely the positive side, just because some of the things that Auburn did well in that four-game win streak, the Tigers continue to do well against Tennessee. Auburn didn't get dominated in the paint the entire game. Tennessee got its offensive rebounds, but it wasn't able really to turn it into second chance points. Auburn still outscored the Volunteers in second chance points. Auburn didn't turn the ball over a ton. Auburn turned it over 10. Tennessee turned it over 15 times. And if some of those shots that you think are good looks and probably should have fallen would have fallen, then Auburn could have had a 20 assist, 10 turnover type of night, and you're feeling real good going into this open date and this week off before the Alabama game. So I'm still leaning towards the positive side, and it's just a tough place to play at Thompson Bowling Arena. We've seen it over the last few times that Auburn has gone there. You know, the last time Dalton Connect scores a career high 39 points, the time prior it's a 46-43 final. These games are weird up in Knoxville, and unfortunately for Auburn, the shots weren't falling in this game. And I think that's more of it. Filip Jovic obviously played great in the aspect that Coach Pearl credited him with being the only guy that didn't get punked. And he said everyone in the locker room was holding themselves accountable. But I think that it almost all came together for Auburn to have another great performance against Tennessee and continue that winning streak. Just the shots didn't fall. And Auburn shied away a little bit from what had been working and driving to the lane and working on the post. And everything else was kind of consistent with what we had seen over the past 2 weeks.
Auburn falls to 5-4 in SEC play as they hit the exact middle of their SEC schedule with the bye you mentioned and no midweek game before Alabama comes to town. Jacob, maybe a little bit of an elementary school question or an elementary school answer with rest being the main priority, but what do you think this Auburn team prioritizes during this bye week before Alabama comes to town and comes to Neville Arena?
Yeah, starting with kind of the rest and everything. The bumps and bruises of the SEC are nothing to shy away from and not to talk about, because that's just part of it, especially with the non-conference schedule Auburn played. Auburn wasn't playing an easy non-conference schedule by any means. It was probably playing the toughest in the nation, playing teams like Arizona, Michigan, Purdue, and so on. And that all translates to the SEC. And when you're playing these tough physical games and having this week off is going to be good. I know that the television broadcast highlighted the bandage that was around Keyshawn Hall's finger. Obviously, that's going to have time to heal. So it'll be good to have that. But also, just really everything that we've been talking about. All right, how does Auburn kind of key in on what went wrong against Tennessee on sticking with the game plan? This Alabama team plays a lot different than your last two Saturday opponents in Tennessee and Florida, because they don't have the interior presence that those teams do. They don't want to go inside as much. They want to hit a lot of threes on you, and they want to run a lot of pace and everything that goes with that. Alabama doesn't turn the ball over, but it also doesn't turn you over. So how can you really game plan for this game going into the last, quite frankly, if you look at the schedule, this is the toughest stretch left in your schedule, because after you go to Arkansas, you've got a five-game stretch against teams that are lower in the SEC, and then you've got Kentucky at home, but the rest of those games are against teams lower in the SEC standings and you can take advantage of. So how do you go into that stretch with confidence that you're able to win those games? And obviously it starts with getting your mind right for Alabama this Saturday, and then going one game at a time, Vanderbilt next Tuesday, and then going to Bud Walton Arena the following Saturday. So I think that's kind of the key here, is happening right at the beginning of February. You can really get your mind right for the stretch run of the season, because yeah, resting up physically is great, but I think resting up mentally is also just as important.
We got our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines, joining us as he does every single Monday at 3:30. And Jacob, I take you from the elementary school question to maybe the impossible question, but after nine games, Auburn is smack dab in the middle of what is whatever we think the SEC could possibly be. How would you best describe this SEC season as a whole? Where 12 or 13 wins rather could win the entire thing, and then put that into the Auburn perspective of how, man, you're still right where you need to be as you compete for possibly a double bye, if not playing until at least the weekend.
Yeah, it is very interesting how things have played out this conference schedule so far. I thought Arkansas was going to be unbeatable in Bud Walton Arena, and then Kentucky goes in there and wins that game, and Florida loses its first conference game of the season and doesn't lose again until Auburn beats them in the O-Dome. But outside of that, the Gators have looked completely dominant. Vanderbilt's back has bounced back from its tough three-game skid. Texas A&M continues to look awesome under Bucky McMillan. He goes to Alabama on Wednesday. So all that to say is it's a little bit of the unexpected. There's some, like Florida, you expect the defending national champions to be right up there. Texas A&M and Vanderbilt, though, I wouldn't have picked them to be as high up in the SEC standings as they are right now. But I don't think there's a ton of separation in how these teams perform. I think that this is really a case of what teams find ways to win games and are the grittiest. And that's what it's going to come down to when you get into tournament time. And I think the SEC tournament is going to be quite fascinating this year. Usually I'm of the opinion that the SEC and the conference tournaments are kind of, they've lost their luster a little bit, but I think that this is a year where the SEC tournament is going to be that much more important and critical for these teams to get that momentum rolling into the NCAA tournament. So I think, to your point, being in position to be a top four seed in that SEC tournament for Auburn is very important, and why these next two games at home are probably the most important of the season before you get into that stretch of going to Arkansas and then you have that stretch we just discussed. So I'm excited for it. I think that Auburn can really capitalize on it as well, as long as it gets its mind right this week.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us on the phone lines here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And switching gears to football here for just a couple of minutes, Hillman. Yesterday was Junior Day, the second one that Auburn has had under new head coach Alex Golish, and a lot of big names there. But more so want to get a reaction from you on what we've seen from Alex Golish and this staff in terms of just visiting high schools around the state. We've seen tons of pictures and videos and posts online about Golish and his staff seemingly talking to just about every major program in the state of Alabama. They've gone next door to Georgia as well. I mean, just kind of react here on the air, Hillman, about what we've seen from this new staff and the new head coach about reestablishing some of those connections and relationships with local high schools and programs around the state of Alabama.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it seems like he's been working a heck of a lot more than you would like him to for his sleep schedule, because I mean, he's just everywhere. Like you said, he's visiting high schools. He was at the Senior Bowl last week. He was at that convention with the entire coaching staff of high school coaches this past weekend. So he continues to build those relationships. And I think he's discussed this as well, but there's obviously a huge focus on the transfer portal and getting experienced players and guys like that when you build your roster. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't ignore the high school ranks, and especially your local and kind of your regional basis. And I can tell that that's kind of what Coach Golish is starting to do now that the portal season is over and this roster is pretty much set outside of, I'm sure there'll be a couple of additions randomly when graduation rolls around in May. But it's very important to have that basis of a group on your roster that is either from the state, from your area, or at least regionally, especially here in the Southeast, because I think that's the kind of culture you've got to build. It's great to get those transfer portal guys that are here for 1 or 2 years and are experienced, and you don't have to, the development isn't as important with them, but also having those high school guys that you can really build off. And that's the thing, that defensive side of the football, a lot of those guys that are going to be impactful for Auburn next year were from the 2025 signing class and in-state guys and highly rated guys. Jared Smith is just a name that just randomly pops in my name right there. Mm-hmm. He was recruited in-state and has a chance to make a huge impact next year. So I think that's a great way to focus on the high school ranks for Coach Golish and staff.
Well, it's a busy time of year on the plains, so we always appreciate our man Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network taking the time to talk with us on Monday afternoons and lay it all out there, my friend. Tell the people what's going on here over the next several days and what they need to know about for everything happening on the plains, around the plains, and with you guys here on the Auburn Sports Network.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it is as busy as it's been in quite some time with Auburn Athletics action. As tennis has been underway, golf got underway. Women's golf won its first tournament, I think, at the UCF Invitational this past week. Men's golf is in Hawaii for its opening tournament. And softball has first pitched this week. Swimming and diving is getting ready for its postseason. But it all starts this week, tonight in Birmingham. The game at Ole Miss had to be moved to Birmingham due to the effects of the snow and ice storm in Oxford. So anyone that's listening in Birmingham, that's free admission tonight at 6:00. If you're not able to make the game, you listen right here on ESPN 106.7 FM, beginning at 5:45. A couple of days off, no action, but then Thursday, softball again opens its season at North Florida before heading down to Clearwater for that tournament. And then we have Tiger Talk on Wings 94.3 FM. We'll have Coach Stephen Pearl as well as Jackie Pearl talking Outlive and everything that you can do to help support that initiative. And then women's basketball will be back on the road at Florida on Thursday at 6:00 on ESPN 106.7 FM. And then gymnastics is back at home against Kentucky on Friday at 7:00. You can get tickets at aubtix.com. And then Saturday it all culminates with the basketball game against Alabama at 3:00. The 2:30 airtime on Wings 94.3 FM. Andy Burcham, Randall Dickey, and Brad Law on the call. So much going on. at this time of year. Baseball gets underway next week with opening weekend. Softball will be home for its opening tournament. Man. So get ready for a ton of Auburn athletics action, and we'll have it all covered on the Auburn Sports Network.
Hillman, we appreciate you as always, my friend. Enjoy the week. Try to find some sleep in there, too, and we'll do it again next Monday, okay?
Absolutely, guys. Looking forward to it. War Eagle.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us every Monday, 3:30, right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the Monday edition of the show.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a good show today, man. We've had a lot of fun. We've covered a lot of topics, and it's flown by, really. And most shows do, let's just be honest. But on a reactionary Monday, talking Auburn, Tennessee, other games around the SEC, around college basketball, some college football news as well, and then just got off the phone with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. And so all of that was here on the Monday edition of the show. If you missed any of it, be sure you go back and check out the podcast version of the show. We just take the audio, put it up there for you on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Again, Auburn Women's Basketball coming up tonight. We will have that for you here on ESPN 106.7. So the drive will be ending a little early, about 5:35-ish. All right, so they'll be ending early. They'll be tossing it to Britt Bowen, who is live in Birmingham. So they'll have that for you here on ESPN 106.7. And then coming up tomorrow, it is Tuesday, where we will be talking some more standing things for SEC basketball, kind of breaking down the Auburn basketball schedule a little bit, what we've seen through the first nine games and what we want to see through the final nine games of SEC play for Auburn to be in a good position in Nashville, be in a good position for the NCAA tournament. So that'll be a lot of fun coming up on tomorrow's program.
Yeah, it will be. It'll be a whole lot of fun being able to talk about some things that didn't necessarily go right for you in the first nine games, some things that did, and now looking at it kind of the opposite side of things when you look at the next nine games, the upcoming nine games, of what needs to go good, what cannot happen, and then do you feel like you're ahead or behind schedule if you are Auburn right now based off of where you were projecting to be or where you were hoping to be, I guess more so on the fan base side of things. But we'll talk a lot about that and talk about if you do what you're supposed to do. We've mentioned it, those last third of your SEC games, your last six games, are going to be a whole lot, quote-unquote, easier. And I say that with major quotations because no game in the SEC is easy. And this year especially has shown that you take a night off, it doesn't matter who you play, you're going to wind up with a loss about 2.5 hours later. But if you do what you're supposed to be, my goodness, do you still have the rest of the SEC slate in front of you? Do you still have the rest of the postseason ahead of you? It could be a really, really fun next couple of weeks for the Auburn Tigers, and we're looking forward to being able to talk about that here on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, so it'll be a lot of fun. Wednesday, we'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We'll have Daryl Dapritz and things. A couple of good games coming up in college basketball tonight. Another top 25 matchup in the Big 12 this evening.
There are. There's some really good games, and unfortunately enough, this is a team that played on Saturday. It was one of the games that we mentioned as Kansas is back on the road as they take on the 13th-ranked Red Raiders of Texas Tech, a top 15 matchup on a Monday night, a doubleheader on ESPN. Syracuse and North Carolina get the night started at 6. Kansas and Texas Tech, that game starts at 8 o'clock on ESPN, so that means it'll be 8:42.
Yeah, so good luck with that if you're able to stay up, which is not that late, but, God, the older I get, man. The earlier I try to go to bed, and then by the time I'm actually, like, laying down, it's like, oh, it's 11:18. It's like, crap, man, what did I do all night? I don't know. But either way, we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.